Good morning, everyone. And yes, this morning I'd like to touch upon the topics on fear, how we overcome fear. And the main problem that we have, especially sometimes people have lots of fear, it just comes from the lack of inner stability, inner peace. Because with that, that's kind of, when someone have the inner peace and inner stability, you're pretty fearless, you know, whatever you face, you know, you're pretty fearless. And also, some of the fears is come from our conditioning. So we've been conditioned, and also because of sometimes what's happening now, like with the pandemic and things, a lot of uncertainties. Because of we being conditioned that we think that we are in charge, we think that we want to keep everything in control. We don't like it when things are not under our control. And because it's so uncertain, and especially facing the unknown, it's very scary. Yeah, that's why it's very scary, because we feel that our sense of self being challenged, because we are unable to really control. Because of that, there's lots of fear. That's like, this is how to deal with that. And that's why they say it's important that first of all, we have to develop present moment, the mindfulness through practicing present moment awareness, bring our mind back to present moment. And because the reason why it's difficult for us to stay present, because we can't let go of the past. Sometimes things that we have done in the past that we couldn't let go. Because sometimes how we view ourselves, we have a certain idea of who we are. And sometimes we couldn't let go of the things. Maybe we have done something that is we think that is we shouldn't have done it. You know, we couldn't let that go. Or someone had done us wrong, we couldn't let that go. Because it's again, it's come from the sense of self, and we have so much anger because of, you know, has someone have done us wrong, and then we think that, oh, I should retaliate. We think that, you know, we try to justify, you know, that yeah, because someone have done us wrong, because we unable to see, you know, that it actually doesn't benefit us when we retaliate. It's not that, you know, because someone have done us wrong, so okay, I have to retaliate. Because we feel like we have to punish that person. But do we benefit by punishing others? We still suffer, isn't it? We still suffer a lot, because the more you think about it, the more angry you are. I remember one of my relatives, my brother-in-law, and he was very upset with his sister. So he suppressed his anger. So he argued with his sister, and then he just went back. But he went back, he could not stop himself thinking about it. So the more he think about it, the more angry he is. You know, actually he keep reinforced that he built up that his anger. You know what he did? He go back and beat his sister up. Because this is how we sometimes reinforce that. Actually it's not that bad. Yeah, we are a bit not happy. Oh, that person said horrible thing. Oh, the person is a bit nasty. How can they say such a thing? You know. But when we go back, you know, we keep churning, keep thinking. Actually, we reinforce that. The anger grow even, you know, more and more intense, to a point that we cannot hold ourselves. And this person, he went back and beat his sister with the eyes here, bruised here, and then swollen, you know. And just he went back. He already lie on his bed, but he lie on his bed. The more he think about it, he could not stand it. He went back. This is how. And sometimes does it benefit us? It doesn't benefit us, isn't it? It's not really helping us. And also, it uses up lots of mental energy. You know, the anger, because the thinking itself drains a lot of mental energy. When we use up lots of mental energy, how do we feel? We feel tired. So if you all the time tired, fatigued, have no energy, when someone have no energy, you tend to become depressed. Everything, oh, not interested. Oh. And then you feel like life is just hopeless. And this is how, that's the negative emotion. And that's why sometimes a lot of people don't, because of lack of mindfulness, lack of awareness, without clarity, we're unable to see that. Yeah, and also because some of them is come from a past conditioning, we've been conditioned. That's why we come out from that. Like for example, just give you an example. Like sometimes like people have, when the child go through lots of abuses, and when even you grown up, you're no longer in that condition, you no longer, you know, but because of we being conditioned, that we develop the perception. So that is the Buddha called that a perversion of perception. So we are not perceiving things as they truly, purely. So what we see is always trigger. So it's always come from our previous conditioning. So because of we develop a certain perception, so how we perceive things, but we don't perceive things purely. And we got affected each time, trigger off, again and again coming up. And then it's just like, give you the example how we've been perverted by our perversion of our perception. Like they have the experiments, like those baby elephants, they've been tied to a stick and they cannot escape. So over a period of time, even they grow up to a big elephant, they won't escape. Because they put themselves in that, like a box, I am like this. That's it. They have a fixed view of themselves. This is how. That's how even people grow up. They still carry the fear. They carry the fear with them because of their conditioning. They put themselves in that. They're perverted by the perception. So that was just, even though the big elephant that can escape, that they won't. It's just like us, that's like we still stay there. We still have the loss of fear because of we could not let go of that. Like sometimes things that we have done, we judge ourselves, we think that we're terrible, we're bad, we shouldn't have done that. That's like we have to come to a place, we have to learn to come to a place of acceptance, accepting who we are. Acceptance itself is letting go. It's kindness. We accept who we are. We love ourselves as we are. If we, all of us, we make mistakes, we do silly things. I do silly things when I was a teenager, you know. My mother used to say to me, is that it's a shame that because when I was a teenager, I was very argumentative. I always argue with my parents, you know. quite rebellious, always argue. I remember I'm the only one. Even my big sister, my big brother, they don't even dare to talk back to my father, but I'm the only one, I talk back to my father. And so when I tell people, they say, okay, my children still got hope. Even you can become a nun. So my children got hope. I said, yes. I said, don't worry about your children. So I said, I did silly things, lots of silly things, but I don't judge myself. You know, but forgive and let it go. We don't encourage, especially the Buddha's teaching, the Buddha encourages not to carry the guilt. What you have done has been done. We just leave it. You know, we can't do anything about it, isn't it? So how are we going to live our life now is important. What have done, we leave it, let it go. We don't encourage people to carry the guilt with us, so we don't carry the guilt with us. I remember my mother used to say, yes, so argumentative. And she said that, you know, you wouldn't get any prize by winning an argument. She used to say that to me. And I remember once my father said, you're quite stubborn, you won't listen. And whatever I tell you, you won't listen. So you know what I said to him? I said, since you know that I won't listen, what are you going to tell me? Oh, he was so upset. My mother said that, how dare you say that? But of course, after that, when I grown up, become more mature, I realized it. How stupid I was at all these silly things I have done. But I forgive myself. I know that, actually, this is growing up. It's a process. We go through that. We don't bypass. So let's don't judge ourselves. And because of that, we can't come out. That's why we have to learn to come to a place of acceptance, accepting who we are, and forgive others that have done us wrong, or we have caused any hurts or harm to others. But we are not forcing ourselves to forgive. But you can't do that. You can't for, I should be able to forgive. Then counterproductive. And again, we judge ourselves. So we say, if we find ourselves, yes, we being honest to ourselves, if we know that at this moment, I still hold on to all the grudges, I can't let go, fine. we acknowledge that we are not pretend, we are not in denying. We acknowledge that, yes, at the moment, I still hold on to that. I still cannot, unable to let go. Fine. But not thinking that I should be able to let go. If I can't let go, I'm terrible, I'm bad. And again, we judge ourselves. And this is how being kind to ourselves, that, okay, I'm unable to let go. I hope, so we send good wishes to ourselves. May I be able to let it go one day. May I be able to forgive one day. But not that I have to be able to forgive. And it becomes counterproductive. And it forces ourselves in. It's because we are not there, we are not there. And this is where we develop that inner integrity. Being honest to oneself. You know, the worst thing that we deceive ourselves, isn't it? And like the one of the quality the Buddha said that we develop the spiritual qualities, that is the truthfulness. Truthfulness is not only lying to others, but not lying to ourselves. And we just honest about how we feel. And not to pretend it's not there. So, and if we understand that, we continue, you know, with following this trend of thought, it's going to cause us suffering. We see that, we investigate, we acknowledge, and then we know this is something that we need to work on. But of course, it takes time. And each time we know we do it a little bit better, a little bit better. It's a gradual training. It will not happen overnight. It's just like we're training our mental muscle. You can't build your muscle overnight, isn't it? It takes time. So each time, so sometimes people ask me, how do I know whether I have any progress in my practice? And I said, actually, you can't really measure, you can't really, you know, really pinpoint, you know, that we don't have a certificate to tell you that which you are in grade one, grade two, grade three. You can't, isn't it? Spiritual practice is different. So I said, actually, you know that whether you have any progress in your practice, like, when your wholesome state of mind increase, unwholesome state of mind decrease, that means you have progress. And for example, like things that you used to hold on for a long time. Maybe in the past, you keep this, you know, for months. But now, maybe you keep it for weeks. How much suffering you have lessened, isn't it? You lessen so much suffering. If things that you used to hold on, can't let go, and keep churning, you know, again and again in your mind, and get so upset and so much suffering. And now, you know, last time, 3 months, and you go down to 1 month, you go down to a few weeks, you give a few days, how much suffering you have? Lessen. I said, this is where you have progress. And this is the size that sometimes we always look at yet. You haven't achieved this yet, but we don't appreciate how much we have achieved, how much we have done, how much suffering they have lessened. So I said, you always have to look at how much we have gained, rather than looking at yet, that, oh, I haven't, you know, I still have this, I still have that. I have remember sometimes people come to me and say, oh, I still have anger. I said, I look at the person, I said, what do you expect? Of course you still have anger, unless you are third stage enlightenment, you're anagami, or you're fully enlightened, then you have no anger. Even you're stream Venus, first stage of enlightenment, you attain first stage of enlightenment, you still have so those subtle type of anger is still there, but it's not the gross type, you know. It's still there, you know. But I said, it takes time. It's not going to happen overnight. So I said, I said, sadhu, sadhu to that person. I said, at least you are wise to the extent. Like the Buddha said that if one knows their own foolishness, he's still wise to the extent. If someone, you know, foolish, thinks that he's wise, he's indeed a fool, isn't it? So I said, at least I said, you see your defilements. Actually, you need to develop clarity and wisdom to see your own defilements, because it's too close, it's very difficult to see oneself, because we've been conditioned. And then the way, because we keep repeating, react to we have certain reaction, you know, towards things, you know, that because we have certain perception, and we keep repeating the same action, again and again, like become a default setting. And we add it like automatic pilot without knowing that we are doing it. And to see that is very difficult, because it's become part of us. It's very difficult to see. So then, as we develop our clarity as we build up our mindfulness, awareness, be more aware of that, be more aware of sometimes how we react, you know, sometimes we know certain things that easily trigger off. And only with that clarity, wisdom, only you'll be able to see that. And you start to see that. So then I told that person, I said, you see, you'll be able to see your own defilements. That means you have wisdom. At least you have wise to the extent you'll be able to see that. If you come and tell me that I am perfect, I have no defilements, I'm okay. I tell the person, I said, I'm worried. If you said that you're perfect, you think that you have no defilements, you're okay, then I truly worry about you. But if you tell me that, that means that you can see that this is something you need to work on. So you're not trying to pretend that it's not there. We acknowledge, we accept that, you know, come to the place of acceptance, to be honest to how we feel, not to pretend that it's not there. Because when sometimes people feel bad, like for example, someone come up to me, say, oh, in front of everyone, I don't want to raise the question, I have lots of jealousy. They feel that because this person judged herself that she thinks that it's bad, that I shouldn't be jealous, I shouldn't have this. I shouldn't have this, I shouldn't have that. And they judge themselves. I say, it's okay. When you're jealous, you just acknowledge that, hey, I'm jealous. This is how I feel. So sometimes if you let it be, just acknowledge, you let it go, actually it will subside by itself. The more you think that I shouldn't be jealous, you will have more jealousy. The more you try to push it away, because when you push it away, actually, you reinforce it. You still crave. We crave not to be a person that is a loss of jealousy. You crave for not to become this person. We crave to become a good person. We crave to be a kind person. We crave not to be an angry person. But craving to be, craving not to be, is still crave. So when you crave, you reinforce that tendency. It becomes even stronger than before. Actually, we ourselves create a big elephant. Actually, sometimes things is actually very small. But because we don't see it, we don't have the clarity, and we reinforce that, and we create more suffering for ourselves. So like the Buddha said, we have a second arrow. A wise person have only one arrow. A foolish person have two arrows. Why is the Buddha said that? Like a wise person, being struck by an arrow, he knows that, okay, this is how I feel. I feel pain. Okay, I have to treat my wound. That's it. But a foolish person, what the foolish person do? They will keep thinking, why, who do that? Why this to me is not fair? You know, so upset, so angry that, you know, it's just like the Buddha said, it's just like you pick up another arrow and you keep poking yourself a few more times. That is the extra suffering, isn't it? We cause ourselves. So rather than we look at the problem, where is it coming from? Okay, this is something I need to deal with. This is something that I have to resolve. That's it. But not more than that. But because of our conditioning, we be conditioned that way. We always run away from things that we don't like. And we always hold on to things that we like. So the Buddha said that we always perverted our likes and dislikes. So some things that we like, for example, if someone that we like, no matter what the person have done, we can forgive the person very easily, isn't it? Something that we like, you know, it's easy to love the person that we like. But if we ask us to love the person that we dislike, it's very difficult. And very easy to do things that we like, isn't it? And we are biased. And we are not perceiving things. It's just go according to our likes and dislikes. But this is where that the whole path of practice, we recondition ourselves. So not to follow the whole habitual pattern, the old way of habitual pattern. It's become a habit, like a default setting. So we have to recondition. So that's why sometimes it's better we bring this out. We reconcile with our past. We accept our past. We forgive and let go. And this is that sometimes we can bring. Like for example, sometimes we can sit. We just bring in, you know, we're breathing in. We see ourselves, you know, that that when I have lots of suffering or abuse when I was 5 years old. So I bring this up. So breathing in. I go back to a child. I'm 5 years old. So that breathing, I smile. So now I smile, do that. I say goodbye. That is already past. And we are not afraid of facing that. We learn to reconcile with our past, not to push it away, not to pretend that it's not there. And because we don't want, because it's unpleasant, so we don't want to feel that. So that's why we have that craving not to be, not to feel that. That's why that leads to fear. We have so much fear that we don't feel that it's terrible. And it's actually, it's the best thing is to not to run away, to look at it, to stay with that fear, to stay with that feelings. And this is one way of dealing with the past that we can't let go. So we bring this up, that, you know, that the ask of forgiveness, we forgive ourselves, we forgive others. Of course, you have to do it again and again. So it's like the way we recondition ourselves, like we brainwash ourselves, of course, in a good way. So I'll just give you an example. If you keep doing that, it's naturally, you know, like we recondition ourselves, we change our way of thinking, a way of perceiving things. Of course, we still perceive things, but we change our perception. So until the point that we truly perceive things as it truly is. But because we don't have that perception at all. So for example, like my grandson, when he's very angry, upset, when he's crying, at that time he was about 4 years old, then the mother used to said to him that, calm down, calm down, calm down. So he said, I don't want to calm down. So each time when he's upset, he said, I don't want to calm down. And then the mother keep telling him, calm down, calm down. And one day, you know what he said? When he got upset again, he tell the mother, I need to calm down now. Because the mother keep telling him, like, you know, recondition, you have to keep telling, recondition. And then he keep telling him that you need to calm down, you need to calm down. Actually, it did go in, it sink in. They said the practice is like that. We need to keep doing it again and again. It's just like the channel. You have to keep deepening it, keep digging it again and again. So he started to do that. And I remember one time when he come to Perth and visit me and visited me. And also he was very upset sitting there. I know that he's not happy. Was so upset sitting there. You know, the sit like that, very angry, looks like very angry. So we normally, we know that he's angry, we just leave him alone, let him calm down, so he will sit aside, he will calm himself. Now, this is how you to train him to how to deal with his emotion. So after that, I thought that he's already calmed down, so I walk and talk to him. I said, how are you? So he talked to me, Grandma, I'm not over yet. I'm not over yet. So I said, okay, I leave you alone. I said, okay, I leave you alone. And this is how we have to keep doing that. You know, whenever it comes up, this is how we set to ourselves, we bring that up, you know, that now I'm no longer a child, I'm already grown up, I'm really strong, I'll be able to protect myself, I'm no longer the one that is so vulnerable, so fragile, because we're still living in the past. Very difficult to come out. It's just like the elephant, when it's grown up, it still cannot escape. Even though it's a small stick, when you're a big elephant, you can escape, isn't it? But we don't want to escape. We still want to stay there. So that we have to learn to accept and reconcile with our past. And then to be able to release the fear of future, the uncertainty. So the Buddhists encourage us to have these five contemplation. So we contemplate. When we contemplate this is help us to release our fear of the unknown. We don't know what is going to happen in the future. There's so much fear, isn't it? Especially we don't know what is going to happen. Facing the unknown is lots of fear, anxieties. So the Buddha said, when we contemplate and reflect on that, it helps us, you know, to simmer our mind, to calm our mind down and sink in. And part of mindfulness is also remember. So when we keep doing that, each time we have the fear, is that you do the contemplation, And it also will help. So what are the five contemplations the Buddha said? So we can do that when we're breathing in. I'm subject to old age. I'm not beyond old age. So sometimes people so much, you know, a lot of attachment towards their body. They have some fear of growing old, isn't it? They try to do all sorts of things. And you see, sometimes people cannot accept that they grow old, they go through all this plastic surgery to try to make themselves look younger. Yes, apparently you look younger, but inside your all your parts is still old, you know. You still die. But and that kind of fear actually creates lots of suffering. And to accept that, getting old, getting forgetful, you know. So when we grow old, three things happen. First, a memory is gone. Then I don't remember the second two. The other two I cannot. This is how, it's just, we accept that, we understand that, we are not fighting, that, yeah, the fact that grow, this is part of growing old, rather than we have so much fear of growing old. And some people cannot accept that when the body becomes like, oh, I cannot remember things, I'm tired, is it? This is part of old age, what do we expect? That is part of life. But if we accept it, actually, we free ourselves rather than we keep holding on, try to do something, try to make ourselves like, you know, pretend that it's not there. Like I'm still be able to somehow make myself, you know, to stay forever, looks good forever. But we are just deceiving ourselves. You know, so it's just part of growing old. So we just said breathing in. You know, just we need to keep reminding ourselves, breathing in, I'm subject to old age, breathing out, I'm not beyond old age. You know, you grow old, yes, of course you're forgetful, you don't remember this, you don't remember that. I remember there was a couple, they're always being very forgetful. So they went through the course, they said, okay, you know, that if you, it's good that you always write down a note, so that you remember, so you know, so that you don't forget, so you always have to write down a note. Then one night, they was watching a television, and the wife told her husband, I'm hungry, so I will have to have something to eat. The husband said, okay, I go now and get you something. So then he said, what you want to eat? He said, I want ice cream. Okay, ice cream. He said, I want ice cream with chocolate topping. Okay, ice cream with chocolate. Chocolate topping. I want some strawberry. Okay, some strawberry. And what else? Oh, some fresh cream. So then the wife said, are you sure that you want to write it down? No, I can remember. You want ice cream, you want chocolate topping, you want strawberry, you want some fresh cream. I remember. So he went down there. The wife was waiting for so long. What the heck he's doing? He's gone down there for so long. And then he said, and finally the husband come up with toast and eight. And then the wife asked, where's the bacon? This is how when you grow old, it's part of life. Sometimes, like, you know, sometimes we rather than we get upset with ourselves, thinking that how terrible we are getting old, why we are forgetful, and then we just keep, like, you know, like, judging ourselves, get upset ourselves, it's not going to help. You know, it's just we accept that it's okay. That it's part of life. You know, it's, that actually you lessen your suffering. It's not going to help us. You lessen our suffering. You say, yes, I'm getting old. I'm, you know, I'm no longer young like before. Rather than we just, you know, just pretend. You know, just try to work so hard. You know, that keep ourselves young. And it actually is lots of suffering. Actually it's a lot of fear of growing old. I remember one of my friends also her grandma in her late 80, almost 90. She's still wearing high heel. And when they go to church, and when no one there, she allowed my friends to hold her hand. When she see anyone come, she fling her hand, and then she will walk like this. Actually, lots of suffering, you know, you just, it's the kind of fear, you know, that's how we remind ourselves it's okay. It's okay to grow old. It's part of the process. It's part of life. And we need to be always reminded. So that's why we bring that up, you know, okay. Breathing in, I'm subject to old age. Breathing out, I'm not beyond old age. The second contemplation that, you know, I'm subject to illness. I'm not beyond illness. You're breathing in, I'm subject to illness. I'm not beyond illness. So sometimes people got so upset, you know, frustrated when they're sick. When I'm sad, that doesn't mean that when you're sick, you don't see doctor. You can need to do our best, you know. Like, you need to see doctor. But sometimes some illness cannot be cured, isn't it? And that you just make peace. So this is how we learn to make peace. We learn to make peace with that. That this is part of life. So we have to develop the perception. We have to get reminded. We reflect and contemplate of that. And not, it's not lying ourselves, you know, deceiving ourselves. He says this is part of, you know, the part of being born. So why we get sick? Because we have this body. Without this body, we will not get sick, isn't it? So that's, we see that this is part of nature. So we are not beyond. So when we get sick, yes, we will see doctor. Sometimes some illness get worse is because of the mental part. Because the more that we don't want to have this illness, actually, we incur more suffering, more pain. I remember that my first retreat that I did, there is a very tough retreat. There's like one of the participants said, the first one, also the last one, I'm not going to do it because to her it's just torturing because you can't sit on the chair, it's on the marble floor, and it's very intense, you know. You have to sit and walk. And the third day, I was so painful. My whole body is so aching and so painful. And I can't sit and I can't walk. And to a point, I almost want to cry because then I was thinking, oh, maybe shall I stop? I just withdraw, just go back. Then I was thinking again, my ego. I was thinking, oh, all my friends know that I'm going through a retreat. And halfway, I withdraw. Then everybody know that I can't. So then I said, oh, I shouldn't have let people know that I go for a retreat, you know. Now I withdraw. But because I was fortunate that I'd be able to overcome that. Because and then when I was to the point that I was so painful, that then I was thinking, okay, it's now mine. I just let that time already become fearless. Okay, even the pain take my life, it's fine. I let it be. So I threw away all the cushion because you know how many cushions I took? 5 cushions. I put 3 here, 2 here, still pain. The moment I sit down, touch pain. Actually because the fear of the pain, actually I reinforce the pain and make it become unbearable. Actually, the moment I let go, then I said, okay, I'm not afraid of the pain. So then I threw away all the cushion, nothing at all. I sit on the floor. It's just amazing. That moment, all the pain gone. And this is the first insight that I have. I understand that actually it's come from my mind, it's my mentor, that I reinforce the pain. I keep thinking that the more I don't want the pain, actually I reinforce the pain. I make the pain become unbearable. And I was so... The moment when I let that go, I'm not afraid of the pain anymore. It's just, the pain is gone. No pain at all. Then I have I have a very good meditation, really very, very still, very peaceful. And that lasts for many days. Even after I finished the retreat, I was so happy. It's about a week retreat. More than a week retreat. So I gone back, I was so happy. The people that I used to dislike, you know, the person that I don't like. And they look so much better. I feel that they look okay, you know. In the past, I don't want to look at them. That everything looked good. The food also tastes good. When you have that, when you're in good mood, isn't it? When you're in bad mood, everything terrible, everything bad. It lasts a few days because I have the experience. And actually, after that experience, I can deal with the pain much better. Because when I have pain, I just know, I just acknowledge, I know the pain is there. Actually, sometimes it subsides very quickly. Because of the more we fight, the more we do on the pain, actually we reinforce it. Actually, sometimes some of our illness is, yes, partly we do have physical, you know, illness and pain, but partly it's come from our mental. Actually, mentally we reinforce that, we make it unbearable. So it's just like, you know, when you focus on that, it become, we amplify. It's like you put things under the microscope, you know, you see that, whoa, you know, and the pain becomes unbearable. So they said partly it's come from mental. They said sometimes when we do that, when we reflect on that, we say, yes, I'm subject, I'm not beyond illness. Actually, it's helped us that reduce our pain. Like we don't manifest our pain, amplify our pain, because the more we fight, the more we do on our pain, we have more pain. And actually, sometimes it's physical, sometimes it's mental, sometimes it's both. Like physical and mental. So if you have physical and mental, you make it worse. But sometimes physically you're okay. Like my case, physically actually I'm okay. Maybe I have a bit of pain only because after you're doing a lot of walking, because it's very tight, a lot of tension, you build up the tension because I do walking, sitting, walking, sitting, walking, sitting. Of course you have a bit of pain, it's natural, but it's bearable type. But because I don't like it, so I keep pushing away. I try to avoid. I don't want to have that pain. So I make it to a point that it's become unbearable. And that's at that moment I let that go. I said, it's okay. You know, it's, if the pain going to kill me, it's fine. Then the moment I let that go, oh, the pain gone. So that's it's really it's good that we brainwash ourselves, we recondition ourselves that it's okay that we grow old, it's okay that we are sick, we are sick, it's okay not to fight. The more we fight, the worse. So the third one, contemplation, that I'm subject to death, I'm not beyond death. It's one day I'm going to face that. You know, that is a what common, it's a very common advice that people, common things that people come to me that ask for advice. How, what type of meditation shall I do facing death? Is someone dying? I said, no such meditation. I said, if you be able to practice, develop, you know, develop the habit of always bring your mind back to present moments, make peace with that present moment, then you are not afraid to die. You can face it anytime. Because you develop that habit each time, you bring your mind back to present moment awareness, you make peace with that moment, you make peace with the situation, then when you die, you can die peacefully, isn't it? So, but you cannot say, oh, last minute, oh, I'm dying, I'm going to do meditation, I think of Buddha, I think of someone. Hey, you can't, because the mind is so happy, sure, not up to you. It's just like we have the story about the Buddha Dharma Sangha, Vesak Buddhist. He only goes to go to temple once a year, Vesak. So he went to one of the temples. So he heard one of the monk giving a dark talk about, you know, if you die, if you think of Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, then that's you were reborn in a good place. So he said, oh, that's easy. He said, oh, no, that's so. So then he come up with a brilliant idea that he renamed his three sons. So the first son is a Buddha, the second is Dharma, the third son is Sangha. So he renamed. So he said, this is his plan. He's a brilliant idea that when he died, so he can see his son Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. So then, as year gone by, so he was on his deathbed. So the three sons in front of the deathbed, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. So he looked at Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. And then suddenly, the moment when he most passed away, he said, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. So three of you here, who is going to look after the shop? You see, you can't change a habit, isn't it? You think that you cannot last minute. You cannot last minute because the Buddha said that we have three kinds of karma. One is the moment that the last moment thoughts, you know, and then one is a happy cheer, and one is a heavy karma. Some people have done heavy karma, like heavy good karma, heavy bad karma. You know, heavy good karma that you kill someone, you kill your parents, you kill an enlightened person. You know, that is a heavy karma, you're enlightened, you attain jhana in a deep state. That is also heavy good karma. And most of karma is more habitual. It's come to habit. So if you develop that, you practice present moment awareness. Whenever you always bring your mind back to this present, you make peace with that. So then you are ready to die. Any moment you die, you're okay, isn't it? So that is the best insurance policy you can have. So present moment awareness. So that's why if you want to insure any policy, insurance policy, so practice present moment awareness. Bring your mind back to present moment awareness. Make peace with that. Then that is more, this is the best insurance you can get. So you can't just say, you know, oh, last moment I tried to think of this. No, I said no such thing. So that's why this is how we face it. And also sometimes we reflect on that. It also helps us to arouse the sense of urgency and we become more appreciative. Appreciative life is precious. I remember that at some stage that I used to practice a lot of mindfulness on death because I have death happening in my family, that my mother passed away after 5 years, my father, and then after my father passed away, 3 months, my brother passed away. That I reflect a lot on that, you know. And that it becomes like every morning when I get up, to me it's a blessing to be just alive. I really appreciate that, the fact that I'm still breathing. And that really helped me a lot. And arouse lots of energy, so much energy, because to me, living itself is a blessing. Living itself, that I'm so grateful. I'm full of gratitude. That fact that thank goodness I'm still breathing. Every morning I get up, I'm still alive. Actually, and I don't feel tired when I have that. I sleep very little, and I work. That time I was in Thailand, I work 8 hours. You know. Busy, but I still meditate. I meditate 8 hours. I sleep very little, like the most like 3-4 hours I sleep. You know, that's all. You know, I hardly sleep. I don't sleep a lot. But I'm full of energy because I don't drain my mental energy, because to me, like, I arouse that kind of the sense of urgency that, wow, I'm still alive. Wow, it's such a blessing. I'm so grateful. I'm so appreciative. Even every single, when I meditate, I'm really appreciate every single breath that I breathe in. I say, oh, giving me life. So I really appreciate every single breath that I breathe in. And that actually, it developed that positive emotion that become more positive. Sometimes people think that, oh, you contemplate of death, that means you become very pessimistic. Actually, it's become negative. Actually, it's not. Actually, the other way around. We become more appreciative. Appreciative of our loved one. Appreciative of the person who helped us a lot. Because we tend to, I realize it. When I look back when I was young, you know, when I was a teenager, how much, you know, I hurt my parents much more than anything else, and they are the ones who love me most, but I hurt them the most, isn't it? I said things that really hurt them, you know, because we take it for granted, because we always know that our parents are loved, they're always forgiven, they're always there for us, they're always, that no matter what we have done, they always forgive us, so we take it for granted. So, but when we realize that one day they will not be there, so even sometimes today we see them, next day we will not be able to see them. So we become more appreciative. So we have something to say, something to tell. But I'm so glad that before my father passed away, I managed to go back and see him. I managed to tell him how much I appreciate him. how fortunate I am. I must have done lots of good karma to deserve a father like, I told him, like a father like you. I said, I'm so blessed. I'm so grateful that, and then I'm so glad that I be able to tell him that. If not, you regret, oh, I should have told him that. So they say sometimes we think, oh, never mind, we still have time. You never know, we might die anytime. So that's why if you need to say something, you need to express your gratitude, you need to say something to your loved one, say it now. Don't wait it for future later, we don't know when. We might not have the opportunity to say that, to do that. So I feel so good I'd be able to do that, I'd be able to say that to my father, that how I appreciate him so much, that he's such a good, wonderful person. So that's why, don't take it for granted. You know, so that actually we become more appreciative. We're appreciative of our loved one. We're appreciative of our good friends. We're appreciative of those who help us. So we become more positive and more appreciative. And then you have more energy when we have that qualities. When you have someone that have that gratitude, you have someone that's so grateful, someone's being appreciative, someone content, and you have much more happier. And that is the energy, a loss of energy. So that's why it's good that this reflection, mindfulness on death, reflect on that, you know, I'm subject to death, I'm not beyond. And the fourth one, that all that is mine and beloved and pleasing will become otherwise. I was separated from them. All our loved ones dear to me. We separate. One day we separate, isn't it? We can't take them with us, isn't it? One day we have to say goodbye, no matter how much we love each other. We still have to come. One day we have to say goodbye. So they said we remind us so that we just make the most of it while we have it and not to take it for granted. So that is the one day we have to separate. So keep reminding ourselves. They said this is one of our practices also. Whenever we come out of a kuti, we always put everything away. We just, okay, we are not coming back. Even I come here for the, I think most of you didn't see because we come early. You see me with so many bags. Actually, it's not my belongings. Because of the bushfire season, we are so close. A bushfire just happened quite close to the monastery. And fortunately, because of the winds not going our way, and then we have a rain next day, then actually the monastery is being untouched, and we are so fortunate. So normally during bushfire season, we have all the important documents, our backup hard disk and all these things, and that we keep in the bag some of the things like then whenever we need to evacuate, we just pull our bag. That's it, you know, all the important things, you know. So each nuns have our evacuation kit. We have our bag with us. So whenever that siren on, people will bring the bag. It's not start packing, you know, what I need, you know. No, I said there's no time. So then be prepared. Even I come from here, I don't know what happened. Maybe they need to evacuate. So it's just, I just want to not to burden our fire warden, because that normally if I'm in the monastery, I will take care. I will take all the things that from the office, you know, out. So if I'm not there, if I left that behind, that one more thing the fire wardens have to do, have to is a burden to them. So I come here, I take it with me. So I just prepare that I might not be able to go back to the monastery anytime. So sometimes it's like when that's that time when the fire happened, actually we are less panicking because we always prepare. Every year we have a drill. Every year we have the drill that, you know, we have to need to evacuate. We always prepare and always expect the worst scenario is going to happen. So when that happened, less panicking, isn't it? And this is, we keep reminding ourselves. I remember when I was about, I think that time I was 15 or 16, I was with my sister. And suddenly a man come and drop my sister back, you know, because it happened so sudden. And two of us standing there can't move, can't even shout out. And we just, two of us standing there. We just, truly, when you're panicked, you cannot move and you can't even shout out. That's why sometimes when we have that, we prepare, we know that that's going to happen. That the fire will come, we have to face this, and we prepare. So that's why this is good that we prepare that this. That for example, when my mother passed away, I did cry. I grieved for the first 6 months. But actually come after that, when I practice, so when my father passed away, actually I didn't cry at all. But doesn't mean that I don't love him. But I don't grieve. Because I've already prepared, I know that that is something that I have to face, that my loved one going to leave me. That's something that I have to face. So then come to my father, my brother, actually I was quite peaceful with that, and knowing that, but doesn't mean that I don't love them. I still love them. But because I expect that it's going to happen. I expect that this is something that I need to face. So that actually, this is a whole path of practice. We practice, we prepare for that moment to come. So they say, yeah, our loved one, you know, no matter how much we love each other. I remember one of our supporters' best friend. The couple is a very loving couple. They've been very, very good. You know, they've been married for many, many years. I think 50 years. They've been so good, in very good relationship. And then the wife died. The husband could not let go. He grieved for a long time. And then one day, because of the husband couldn't let go, the wife, his spirits are still hanging around because of the partner could not let him go, let her go. And then she said, like, she's went to one of these supporters got her friend, husband, secretary. I think sometimes some people you cannot connect. Maybe she'd be able to connect with the friend, husband, secretary, and told her that she's a lot of suffering because asked the husband to let go. If the husband don't let go, it's very difficult for her. So then this is how, and then they weren't a Buddhist at all. You know, they're not Buddhist, but then she come and tell the husband, you know, if you're holding on to her, please let her go. If you don't let her go, it's difficult for her. She's not in peace. She can't really take. She can't really continue her next life, her journey, because of you holding on to her. So let her go. So that's why it's important. If we truly love our loved ones, we let them go. Yes, of course, you know, we would like to, you know, of course, we still love the person. Of course, we don't really, deep down, we don't want to let them go. But if we truly love our loved ones, so we let them go, not to hold on to them. Because sometimes when we hold on to them, we create more suffering for them. And they said that she got lots of suffering. She can't move on to her next journey because her husband so much hold on to her so much. And then that's why he come and ask the friend, you know, pass on the message to the secretary of the friend's husband, and telling the friend and telling her to tell the husband, you know, let's go through this, that let her go. And it's a true story. It's not making up. But that's why sometimes they say, yes, they say, it's so when we reflect on that, also we let our loved one go. Also we prepare for that. So, and then the fifth one, they said that we are the owner of our own karma. So we responsible for our own action, because we like to blame other people for our suffering, isn't it? We think that because of you, because of that, actually we don't see, whatever we do, We responsible for our own action. So that's like that, ultimately that we are the one have to responsible for our own action. So what other people have done, it's okay. Even other people have done us wrong, it's their problem. Because we don't have to responsible for their action. Whatever they have done. But if we got angry, get upset, or we retarded, then we have to be responsible, isn't it, for our own suffering. And we suffer. So sometimes that we, most people think that, oh, if I forgive that person, that means that I let the person get away. But when we forgive others, in fact, that we've been kind to ourselves. It's a relief. It's we holding on to that, holding on that, how terrible the person, you keep thinking of that. Who's the one who suffers? We ourselves, isn't it? Actually, when we let that go, when we forgive, you know, others, actually, in fact, we've been kind to ourselves. And we are the one who benefit. It's not the person that we forgive that are going to benefit. We are the one who benefit. And that's why we keep thinking that we, that's why the Buddha said that, so, like there are three kinds of person. The first kind of person, they just, whatever they do, they just think of what make me happy, I don't care. Even on the expense of others, that's my business. As long as anything make me happy, it's very self-centered and very selfish person. And the second type of person, because everybody is doing it, they must be right, I just follow, I just do. And that, and then you never contemplate and reflect whether this is appropriate, whether this is inappropriate, whether this is skillful or unskillful, or this is appropriate to do that, without reflecting, without thinking twice before we speak and we act. So this is the second type of person, just follow whatever other people do. And never think that they never think for themselves and never reflect and contemplate whether this is the right thing to do. And the third person is a wise one, wise person, that we reflect and think whatever we do, is it going to cause any suffering to others? Is any cause any impact on others? And is this causes other people suffering? Is it beneficial to myself and to others? And is it for my own well-being and the well-being of others? Because sometimes if you have done something that is, you know, causes suffering to others, deep down we know. And it will not be peaceful, isn't it? And then it just keep, you know, it affect our mind and then we cannot be peaceful. We keep thinking about it. We feel sorry. We feel bad. You know, that's why sometimes when we do that, actually it's for our own benefit. So that's why remember that we responsible for our own action, it's not someone else. Because some people, because it's easier to just blame others and you don't have to do anything. Not my fault, everybody, other people's fault. Then you will not come out from that suffering because you don't see that you are part of the contribution. We contribute towards that. We are able to see that. So if we keep thinking that our suffering is come from outside, because of I angry because of this person said nasty thing to me, so I can guarantee you get rid of all this person that you think that that causes suffering. You think you're free from suffering? No. Isn't it? Even the person that make you angry, you think that even the person leave, you still have anger. That anger is not come from that person, it's come from what? That's why you'll be able to look at what's arises in this moment, how to deal with your emotion, how to make peace with the situation. That needs to develop that clarity, mindfulness. You have to establish your mindfulness, be able to see that whatever comes up, that, and be able to see for yourself that how you react to things, what causes the suffering. You be able to investigate, be able to see that. But without the clarity, without mindfulness, without the inner stability, inner peace, it's very difficult to see that. Because our mind is very quick. We already, you know, whatever that we see, because it's like default setting, it's just immediate, you know, that's the kind of reaction is very impulsively we react. Like, we are very good at that. We have, because it's become a default setting. But the practice is that we be able to slow down, we be able to see. That we be able to catch that. That's why you need to develop the mind. Your mind become more refined that you be able to catch that. If our mind is not refined enough, we are unable to see that, because the mind's one mind's moments is very very fast, even faster than light. It's just like the light. When you see the light is like that, but actually the light is like, you see the light is like that, but actually the light goes like this. Like even water, you see when you open the tap. and the water flow. Actually, the water is go drip by drip like that, but you see like one whole line, isn't it? So that's why you have to develop the mind that's so refined to be able to catch that. And this, it's very difficult to see that if you don't develop that mindfulness, that wisdom, the clarity. So ultimately, we have to rely on self. So the teachers, even the Buddhas, that he's only give us, show us the way. But ultimately, we have to do the work. There's no shortcut. So there's no shortcut. People want to have shortcut. There's no shortcut. So building up your mental and a muscle is just like, it's the same thing. You have to do it again and again. You have practice. You see all those world champion. How much time they have to put in, isn't it? You know, those swimmers, how many hours they have to swim? All those, you know, those people who do the diving, you know, all the salmon swat, how they turn, they practice again and again and again until it's perfect. The same thing, the practice is also the same. So it's okay if you find that you cannot focus on your breath, you skip wander off, then at least you know that how busy your mind is. Your mind is wander off. You just sit there, just watching your mind. And somehow you just keep sitting there, yes, this is how I feel. And you keep break, you keep training your mind, come back to present moment. No matter how many times your mind wander off, you keep bringing back, you keep bringing it. This is how you train. It's no different by any other, you know. There's no shortcut. You have to keep training your mind. Then to the point, and then when your mind become more settled, and you develop, and then it's naturally your mind don't wander off very far. Naturally, your mind come back to present moment awareness. That is where you start to develop your confidence. You have much more confidence, and you're not easily affected by things. You know, not get pulled in, get sucked in with the trends of thoughts. You know, sometimes like, you know, gone to Siberia without knowing how we get there. And you become more aware and more mindful of how we react, what things comes out, and you just look at it and say, yeah, it's okay. We're not fighting. And this is how the practice, it takes time, little by little. So I offer this for Dharma reflection. May this teaching be of benefit to all of you. So any questions or comments? Any questions or comments? No questions, no comments. Is it all satisfied? Good customer? Satisfied customer? No complaint? Oh, yes. Okay, good.
How do you respond when somebody was really angry in that precise moment and they are being quite aggressive to you? What's the best way to respond when that happens? Okay. When you feel a reaction come up against the person who is being aggressive towards you?
Usually, this is how the Buddha said, like the Buddha thought about right speech, that is that you have to fulfill the five conditions. So have to be the right time, right place. So if the person was so angry, it's not the right time. Anyway, won't listen. In fact, the person get more angry. If you open your mouth, you say anything, you're getting, it's not going to improve the situation. So that's why when to speak, actually we reflect, we have to fulfill the five conditions. That's why we practice right speech. Right speech is the right time, right place. Is it what we said, but is said, whether it's true? Whether it's come from kindness, not out of ego, that I just want to tell you how stupid you are, you know, then that is not come from kindness, come from ego. Is it beneficial to the person? So if not beneficial, sometimes we said it, the person get even more upset and then not beneficial to the person at all. So it has to be beneficial. And then the fifth one, the way we speak, whether it's the words that we use, is it gentle, it's pleasing to the ears, because sometimes some people, the way they speak, the tones that make me feel very uncomfortable, it's not pleasing to the ears. So we fulfill five conditions. So then, yes, So like freedom of speech is not that we can speak whatever we like to speak. If it's going to cause any hurts or harm to others, then we restrain ourselves not to do that, not to say that. But again, we practice right speech. We don't practice right silence, right speech. So sometimes people come to a point, don't say anything. It's not that we shouldn't say anything. So if it's right time, right place, you know, if we fulfill the five conditions, we need to speak up. Like we don't just keep quiet and suppress, you know, we need to speak. And we practice right speech, not right silent. Doesn't mean that you keep silent, you know. There's sometimes at some condition, sometimes it's in some situation you need to speak up. So then you need to speak up. They say again, it comes back to your wisdom, your clarity, your wisdom, to use your own discretion when to speak and act appropriately. That takes lots of wisdom to be able to do that. So is that answer your questions? Make sense to you? Okay. Any questions or comments? Yes.
That story that you told about how after you went to the retreat and you saw the people you didn't like in a new light, in like a nice light, what strategies do you use to like love people that you don't really identify with? Uh-huh. Like, what do you do to see them like with love?
Okay. So normally I don't really force myself that the person that I don't like, I don't force myself, I have to like the person, I have to love this person, I don't do that. I just acknowledge that, yes, this is this person that I don't like, but I also remind myself that not to be biased. And because normally the person that we don't like, whatever they do is not right. Isn't it? We are biased, you know. The person that we like, even they do something wrong, so we try to justify, oh, no, maybe this, maybe that. We give all sorts of excuses because this person we like. So we just be honest and acknowledge that. So, and then slowly this will fade away. But it takes a bit of time. But we cannot say, we don't judge ourselves as well that you shouldn't do that. You should like this person or, you know. Sometimes you don't have a strategy. Actually, you just be able to acknowledge and accept. So recognize that, acknowledge, accept that, accept this is how we feel. We don't pretend that, you know, we really hate that person and we pretend that, oh, no, I love that person. Then we are not truthful, we are not honest to ourselves, isn't it? So we just honest to ourselves that this is how we feel. So we forgive ourselves. And we forgive others, and then we let it go. And this letting go would not happen overnight. It's a process. First of all, you have to be able to recognize that, isn't it? Sometimes we are unable to recognize. And sometimes we are able to recognize that we are unable to acknowledge. Acknowledge, to accept that. Forgive, and let go. It takes time. You have to keep practicing that. And slowly... For me, that one is just temporarily because of after the literature, and then you feel good. After that, you go back to square one. So you have to go, you have to keep practicing, you have to keep training. You train your mind. It's just like any other, like, you know, like world champion, you need to train. How many hours people need to train? The same thing. You know, we have to put in effort, have to train. So is that answer your questions? Big sense? Any more questions or comments? Yes.
Like you said that you're really grateful that you had a chance to say to your dad before he passed away those good things.
Yeah.
What if someone didn't have that chance?
Oh, if doesn't have the chance, you still can bring your loved one to mind, your loved one to mind, that you just reflect on the good qualities of that person. Also, and then actually, when you reflect on the person that you love, that good quality, actually you grow. If we are unable to say that, it's fine. We have to just, it's already passed. We have to let that go. But you can bring, like for example, my mom passed away. I didn't say that to her. But I grieved for 6 months. And after that, one day I realized that why I look at why I look at I have lost this person? Why don't I look at it that I have this person in my life for all these years? So rather thinking that I have lost this person, but I just turn around and look at it that how lucky I am to have this person in my life. So you can bring that. So you, and then since then, whenever I think of my mom, I always look at the good qualities that, you know, my mom's good quality that actually bring me lots of joy and happiness. So since then, actually, I never grieve at all. Now, even I think of my mother, actually, is always happy because I feel I have so much gratitude and I feel so blessed that I have this person in my life. Rather than, oh, I lost this person, oh, I miss this person. Even though physically she's not here, but she's still with me. Her qualities with me. I remember all her good qualities. Her good qualities stay in my mind. So I keep her in my mind, her good qualities in my mind. So at least you reflect that at least she give you life. You know, the fact that you're here, she give you life. So just be thankful to develop that gratitude. So get up early in the morning. So I'll be thankful. If we don't learn a lot today, at least we learn later. If we don't learn later, at least we are not sick. So if we get sick, at least we're still alive. So just keep develop that, because if you don't have that, you know, if you don't have that gratitude, contentment, it's very difficult to be happy. Even you have the best in the world, you know, we have all the best thing, the best condition. If deep down you're still empty, you're not content, you don't have the gratitude, you're unable to enjoy what we already got. It's very difficult. We still keep looking for something else. So that's to develop that, you know, to bring her to mind that at least you say, oh, be thankful that my parents or my loved one, at least they give me life. That's why the fact that I'm here, I'm still practicing, I still have the chance, I still have the opportunity to practice. So thank you for giving me my life. Thank you for giving me life. And just be thankful and grateful. So does that answer your questions? That makes sense to you? Okay. Any more questions or comments? Okay. So any more questions or comments? Yes.
When it comes to being angry at someone,
uh-huh,
I've done damage to someone.
Uh-huh.
So I'm thinking particularly about my son,
uh-huh,
especially during lockdown,
uh-huh,
being at home,
uh-huh,
as a single parent.
You just determine from today's onwards. This is how you start to practice. You slow down. First thing you get in the morning, you try to slow down. Because this is how when you slow down and you develop your mindfulness through your bodily actions, that it's helped to slow down your mind. Because so that when your anger comes, you don't react so fast. So they said the first thing you have to slow down your pace, your everyday life, to allow have more space in your mind. So whenever you feel that, they said it's good that you develop the body awareness, because when you get angry, you feel your body is tight. So when you feel that before you yell, you're aware of that. So you just telling yourself, okay, calm down, calm down. So do the breathing exercise. But because sometimes if you don't start to slow down, because you react too quick, very quickly, once it pops up, you already react. That's why sometimes you need to, first of all, you need to slow down first. Try to slow down. This is how try to develop practice present moment awareness, bring yourself to present moment awareness, and also be aware of your bodily sensation, body awareness, so that to stop yourself from reacting. And it takes a bit of time. You have to be patient. So, and you also, again, you forgive yourself. And no one is born as a parent. I make lots of mistakes too. When I bring up my son, I hit him too when I got angry. But I forgive myself. Forgive yourself. So this is how to, because no one born as a parent, you think that once you become a parent, automatically, you know, you don't know. So we learn as we go along, isn't it? We make mistake. You know, that's why I always tell people, forgive your parents. They're doing their best. So no one born as a parent, it's not that once you become a parent, like automatic, the switch will on, you know what to do, how to become a parent. No one know. How do I know how to become a mother? I don't know. So I make lots of mistakes too, you know. But this is how I learn as I grow, as I go, you know. This is how, it's like that, we learn as we go. No one naturally born as a parent. And you're doing really good. So sometimes always go back to ourselves that we do our best. Maybe it's not perfect, but it's our best. That's why I keep telling, even I keep telling our nuns, I said, I'm doing my best. But if you're not happy, sorry, this is what you get. I said, I do my best. You know, I can't do better than best, isn't it? I can't do better than best. This is my best. I'm doing my best, trying my best. And you are doing your best. You've been a good parent. Of course, sometimes not always easy. So that's why, again, come back to have loving kindness towards oneself. Forgive and let it go. Forgive yourself as well. So, does that answer your question? Make sense to you? Okay. So, any more questions or comments? Any more? Yes.
The breathing techniques. What breathing techniques do you use in, like, when you're waking, when you're not meditating, to bring yourself back to that calm?
Oh, for example, sometimes I feel like, I'm a bit nervous this moment. So you can just breathing in. Actually, it's helped you to calm down. Because normally we normally easily suck into the trend of thoughts, and that make it worse. You get, oh, terrible. Oh. So normally when that happens, I'm just breathing in nervousness, that anxiety, breathing out peace. I make peace with that. Because when we recite that, actually it gives that impact in your mind, that remind the mind that it's okay. It's just a way to calm your mind down, that we make peace with that. It's okay that I feel that. Because most of the time we think that it's not all right. We shouldn't feel that. And where on earth everybody, every single moment, happy, happy? No, isn't it? So yes, ups and downs. And we just learn to make peace, whether it's happy, unhappy, you know. It's whatever that we experience that moment, we learn to make peace. We have a good relationship with that. Not to say, oh, you terrible, you get angry, you know, I don't like you. No, we just learn to make peace with that. So that's why we always, whatever we experience, life is a learning process. It's not an end product. So when we suffer, we learn from suffering. When we're happy, we learn from happiness. So each every time, you know, what we experience, we something to learn. This is where we grow. Is that answer your question?
So with the breathing, how many, like, do you just do a few breaths?
You just see if you already calm down, you just let it be. Okay. Yeah, it's just that depends on how long it takes. But you can find that it's started to calm down. So when it's calmed down, you can go back to your body, stay with your body, and feel the sensation, the feelings. Sometimes Sometimes you can feel your stomach is really tight, so you just, okay, aware of the tightness. And then sometimes you just observe the tightness. Then eventually the tightness will just subside. So when it subsides, actually, that your emotion already subsides. Because that emotion manifests in the body. So once the sensation, the feeling subsides, actually that emotion already subsides. So any questions or comments? Yes.
So this is on the same kind of train of thought around it. So if you're experiencing whatever emotion it is,
yes,
and if, let's say you're having a big emotion about something.
Uh-huh.
For me, when I'm doing that, I can go, well, I don't really want this emotion. I try and sit with it or breathe with it.
Uh-huh.
And then I start having lots of thoughts about, how might I have a whole series of thoughts about how I might get away from that, what I might do to change that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's necessarily overly useful, but... Yeah, I'd just like to know your thoughts around that. I mean, is it better to try and keep away from the thinking around?
Yes, because when your mind is not peaceful, so that the thinking actually make it worse. Is you're not sometimes people thinking that they're reflecting. Actually, they're not reflecting. They're thinking, they're feeding their thoughts. So that's why the reflection has to happen when your mind is become peaceful and calm. So that's why sometimes it's good when you're in that. So stop. That's why this is important, like every day. Like you can make it a habit. Like sometimes you find that you're quite overwhelming with whatever with your work and you think that it's too much, you stop. Learn to stop. So just pause. Take 3 deep breaths. Okay. Because when you do that, your attention goes to your breath. So that's try to cut off your mind, not to go follow the trends of thoughts. So that, take 3 deep breaths, then you feel better, you calm down a little bit, and you can do that breathing in, that emotion, that how you feel, the unpleasantness, breathing out peace. And you do that, and until you feel that more and more and more subside, then you stay with your bodily sensation, your feelings. And because, like just now I have mentioned about the reflection, you can do reflection, it's only after that, you know, you do relaxation, you do the body awareness, and then you settle, and then sometimes from time to time, the emotions still come out. But that time you're already pretty peaceful. Then when you're quite peaceful, when you do that reflection, it's help. But when you're in that frame of mind, you try to reflect, actually you're feeding your thoughts. It's not really helpful at all. So the reflection, the contemplation, your mind have to be peaceful enough, calm enough to be able to do that, but not in that kind of confusion and, you know, that's still emotional. You can't do that. That it becomes like that. You're already feeding your thoughts, your thinking. If you do that, it's not helpful. Is that answer your question? Okay. So yes.
I just wanted to comment and acknowledge and honor you and your great teachings. You're beautiful and far from your heart. And I want to say thank you with gratitude and blessing.
Okay, thank you. Okay. So any more questions or comments? Yes.
Was there a moment that we faced the devil himself or the most evilest force you could possibly... Imagine if it comes for a moment where we have to directly stare in the face of its head, sort of grabbing us completely.
Mm-hmm.
We're, you know, terrified, petrified, completely enmeshed in something that can be considered the most evil thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
What do we do in that moment?
Mm-hmm. So, when that moment comes, the first thing, you just pay attention. To attention to your chest. So you see there's any tightness, any tension in your body. So that is it. Because that helps you to take your mind away. Because normally when they come, the reaction is that we try to push it away. It's like, but you go back to your, because the emotion itself is a more subtle object. But if you try to deal with the emotion, like sometimes, actually the best way to deal with that, actually to sit with that feelings. But it's a bit quite difficult. Like, for example, you have lots of fear. If you stay with the fear will keep going. When the fear hits the maximum point, it bounds to subside. So nothing will go up, never come down. That is the nature. Everything goes to the maximum point, it will subside. So that I have the experience that the first time I live in a cave, that I was really terrified, lots of fear, so much fear, and I don't know what to do. And I just remember I remember one of the discourse that I read. There's the suttas from the Buddha. The Buddha said that when you have fear, they're coming up, then it arises that moment. So if you sit, you continue to sit. You walk, you continue to walk. You just remain that posture. So that time, I was so terrified. Then I used the blanket to cover my face because I was really terrified. Because I feel that there is someone walking over me, coming to me and watching, like staring at me, but actually nothing there because of the fear. This is how when we have the fear, we will start to have that imaginations, you know, someone, and then you will interpret all the sounds, like, you know, it's just a normal rustling of the leaves. It becomes like someone walking, you know. You will interpret that way because you want to hear what you want to hear. You want to see what we want to see, isn't it? We will interpret that. We will perceive that. I can't even express how terrified I was, the fear. I cow, then I don't dare to move. I use a holding the blanket. I cover myself. I just stay like this. I was. I don't know how long I've been staying with that fear, very fearful. And I can feel the fear going to the max. And the moment when the fear hit the max, actually it's like subside. So subside by itself. The moment when it subside, I was very peaceful. Very, very peaceful. And then I start to hear all this sound. Actually, oh, nothing. It's just like sometimes dripping. In the cave, you have those water dripping. It's just like dripping. But to able to do that, you have to have enough mental stability to do that. If you don't have enough mental stability, it's quite difficult. So that's like one of the things you can do, you have to practice present moment awareness. Bring your mind back to this present moment and to just recognize and acknowledge that this is what's happening and not judging yourself, you know, not thinking that it's terrible, it's bad, you know. And then after that, you can also do the breathing exercise, breathing in this evil, this terrible, you know, it's okay, you know. That you're breathing out peace, I make peace with that, it's okay. This is how I feel, this is how terrible I feel, it's okay. This is how I feel. And you keep doing that, but it still persists. So then you go to your feeling and sensation, you feel that, how is it feel like? And this is how, because if you keep, if you from breathing, if it's still on, you do the bodily sensations, and when you do that, actually it's already slowed down, it's already calming down that emotion. So actually when you do that, actually it stops you from feeding your thoughts. Because when you feed your thoughts, you know, or the thinking, actually you reinforce, and the next time it comes up, become more intense. So this is good not to allow your mind to reinforce that emotion. So going do the breathing in, breathing out exercise is help. And then you can go back to your bodily sensations, your feelings, how you feel like this moment. So is it any, normally when you have that, you can feel your body tense up. It's very tight. tense up. So then, what do you do? Try to relax your body. Do body relaxation. Because when you put your mind, your attention on your body relaxation, it takes your mind away from going to feeding the thoughts, you know, you not to suck it into that. Actually takes your mind away. So then you pay attention, your attention is in your body. So just relax your body. Just swing, relax, relax your neck, relax, and it's help. Sometimes then slowly your mind will calm down. So then this is how when you start to build up, then you have more mental stability. So next time this calm out, you'll be able to watch the arising and passing away of the fear of the terrible feelings, you'll be able to do that. But if your mind is not stable enough, it's quite difficult because it's sometimes it's too strong. Your mind is not stable enough to be able to really to watch that, to watch the arising. Because everything arises, passes away by itself. So then to the point that when you're stable enough, you'll be able to watch that, you know, to have the aware of the non-reactive awareness of this arising and pass away. And that's where you start to build up your confidence. And then you would not worry about whatever terrible ego, whatever emotion comes up. You know that it won't stay. You know that it will going to subside by itself. But it takes a little bit of time. You need a bit of patience. It will not happen overnight. Does that answer your questions? It makes sense to you?
You touched on something about the mind not being strong enough. I was hoping that just talk about sensual indulgence, how that affects the power of the mind, especially when it comes to not sensually indulgent. We lose our power to face those issues.
So for this sensual desire, you cannot. Sometimes people can be too harsh on themselves. So that's why you have to do it in a gentle way. So that's why we have to learn to let go little by little. We restrain ourselves, but not too harsh. Sometimes people say, "Okay, I determine I'm not going," you know. And actually, you know, like for example, we have a certain indulgence, you know. So okay, we determine, it's good that we be able to stop that immediately, but we can't, you know. So that we do it in a small way, maybe, you know, little by little we give up, you know. So for example, yes, our goal is to lift 100 kilograms, but we cannot just force ourselves to lift 100 kilograms. So we start with 5 kg, 10 kg. So this is slowly we let that go, because it can be counterproductive. It's too much willpower. Try to restrain. I shouldn't do that. And you know, then it's also not being too kind to ourselves. Like for example, maybe we love to eat chocolate. So then maybe I reduce, you know, if one day, every day I eat 5, you know, I go down to 4, you know, then you go down to 3. And because sometimes we are not skillful, they've been too harsh to themselves, not kind to themselves, and it's become counterproductive. It's just the Buddha's early days when he practiced, because he tried to abandon his indulgence, you know, like its sensory pleasure. He used to do the modification, you know, not to eat, not to sleep. That's too much, you know. So that's why you have to be, you know, just let go little by little. You have to say, yes, it's good that, you know, we determine, but eventually we get there. For example, you know, 100 kilos, if each time 5 kilos we increase, then we'll be able to do 5 kilos, we do 10 kilos, we'll be able to do 20 kilos, we do 15 kilos. Eventually, we will reach up to 100 kilos, you know, isn't it? But we cannot force our mind to be able to, okay, this is what I want to do, I want to reach it, this is my aim. This is my goal. I want to achieve it right now. You can't do that. So that's why you have to little by little, you know, restrain yourself, but not too much willpower. Too much willpower become counterproductive, but we need to restrain. within, that's why it's important to know our limits within our own, within our limits, our capability, but not too much force. So it's more like the middle way. So it's not easy with the middle way. So we sometimes we swing from one end to another. So as we develop a clarity, we swing less. So then slowly, we swing less and less and less, and we come to the middle. So it takes a bit of time. But you can see that you suffer less as you progress. You'll be able to notice that. It takes a little bit of time. Does that answer your questions? Okay. So any more questions or comments? Yeah? Okay. Going, gone.